Three great words. Free Fries Friday. Especially when they're used in that exact order. Get a free medium fries with $1 minimum purchase.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Valid one time on Fridays at participating McDonald's through 12/31/24. Excludes tax, must opt into rewards.
I'm Aaron Sagers, and this is Talking Strange.
Hey there, spooky nerds. Aaron Sagers here, and we're doing a little bit of a Talking Strange live in Tombstone, Arizona, and coming at you from the Longhorn Saloon and Restaurant. Having one of their famous margaritas. That is a good margarita. And I am joined by the creator and host of Desert Sky Adventures on YouTube. And that is Dave Silva. So Dave, thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome to Tombstone.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here. We're going to be here for the Tombstone Wild West Paracon. Pew, pew. I feel like I have to... That was not a very good gunslinger move. To kick things off, I know that on the Desert Sky Adventures, you've got a whole host of videos that kind of cover the culture and the history of Tombstone. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of some of those videos, tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into this and putting these videos together.
Well, when it comes to video work, stuff like that, I really didn't have a background in it. It's kind of something I just learned on my own. I've lived in Tombstone for almost 2 years now, but I've been coming here for a long time before I actually moved here. And several years back, I just thought it'd be fun just to start a YouTube channel. Didn't know what it would be about or what it would be, the topic of it would be, or which direction it would go, but just something to do. And so I started doing that. I was making videos about all sorts of different random things. And I noticed the Tombstone videos when we came to Tombstone were by far, in a way, the most popular videos that I put together. So once we moved here, I basically had like a whole endless smorgasbord of content to produce of different locations, different stories, historic things, things going around Cochise County, events, things to do, stuff like that, in the history as well. So it's kind of evolved into basically all things Tombstone and just about all things Cochise County, pretty much.
Was your background as a historian, or was it just you loved this stuff and decided to document it?
No, I've always been kind of a student of history. I wouldn't say I'm a historian, but I like to learn as much history as I can. And when those Tombstone videos started taking off, that just became kind of an idea. It's like, maybe we can talk about some of the historic stuff that happened, or maybe things that people aren't aware of, or things that people think happened but actually didn't, you know, stuff like that. So there's a lot of like sifting through the weeds, talking to people, talking to the historians, people that have, that really know the history of the town, trying to get some of the stories straight. But yeah, no real background in media or anything like that. It's just something I just kind of learned through the last couple of years.
I love it. A passion that then became kind of part of this job,
this
kind of vocation of yours. So you said you grew up in Phoenix, was
yes.
it? So coming here all your life, from little kid to a big kid, how was it different when you finally moved here and you started getting into, like, really digging into the history and the stories of here? What changed for you? I mean, because I imagine you probably knew a lot about Tombstone, and then you peel back this whole other layer once you're here. So what kind of changed?
It's actually kind of interesting because I'd lived in Arizona for probably about 25, 30 years and never actually made it down to Tombstone until probably 6-7 years ago. So it's not a place I'd been coming to as a child, but my wife had been here several times and she was a big fan of it. And finally we got a chance to come down here, and that was all it took. It was just the one time walking around town, looking at the old buildings, reading the little placards and the stories and all the stuff. And I mean, people will describe that when they come here, it just kind of hooks them. Like, they want to learn more about it. They want to see more, do more. And we were just at a unique position in time where we were able to actually make that move. We were kind of looking to get out of the city. And it's like, well, where would we go? Obviously down to Tombstone or somewhere near it.
Yeah.
So we were kind of lucky to find a place here. At the time, there wasn't a whole lot of selection, but it kind of took off from there.
I love that you started coming here, and then within a couple short years, you're like, we're all in, we're moving here, and really becoming part of the community.
Yeah.
I mean, with that, something that's really cool is like I get to travel around a lot and explore different locations, but I'm always envious of people that are really rooted in a location where you're really just constantly surrounded by the history. I mean, I do have that a bit. I live in New York City, but I think it's different when you're like in a place like this, still a fairly small community.
Yes.
Was this an area that, what was sort of the biggest hurdle to getting people to open up and share their stories about history and the culture here? Because, I mean, like, you know, you're not from the area originally.
Well, a lot of people that do that are already into kind of explaining that stuff to the tourists and the guests. And they, I mean, obviously they like doing that. It's something a lot of these people have been doing for a long, long time. So it really wasn't that hard. I mean, you start out just going up and down Allen Street, reading the little placards. This happened here, this happened there. Just interesting stuff, you know. And then there's tours and there's things like that. So there's a lot of different places you can go to learn information like that. There's plenty of museums, visitor center. There's people that work for the city that love talking history. And some of the tour guides out there really love talking history. So it wasn't very difficult at all, actually. It's one of those things that people offer up quite a bit, even when you don't ask sometimes. It's the history of something that's in town.
Yeah, as a content creator, I think you have to do this stuff because you love it, and then hopefully it becomes part of a larger project or job.
Right.
But even still, you're doing it and you love it, but there tends to be this moment where it kind of clicks and you're like, okay, this is really the right path for me. I'm doing the right thing. This feels good. This feels like, what was the video, what was the project, the story where you documented that you're like, you know what? This feels right. Like, I know I'm on the right path.
I could tell you what that was. Like I said, I was making videos about Tombstone before I even moved here. And my friend Bruce now, who worked for the city, saw those videos before I even came here. I mean, before we moved here, anyway. And he was a fan of the videos, and he contacted me out of the blue one day. I think I put on my channel or on Facebook or something that we were going to move down here. And he saw that and wanted to talk to me about possibly working for the city. So when I came down here, that really wasn't the plan. Obviously, I wanted to do my YouTube channel, but, you know, whatever else I could find as far as work, I was pretty much going to do, you know, just whatever to make ends meet. But very shortly after we got here, I got the call from Bruce. I went down and talked to the people at the city, and they hired me on as part of the marketing team. So I'm kind of the official videographer of Tombstone.
Okay.
But that whole thing happened so fast. There was really no in-between time where it's like, well, I'm not sure what I'm going to do now that I'm here.
Yeah.
But everything just worked out, you know? When, like, when things are supposed to happen, they usually work out pretty well.
What's been, I mean, people come into town and they want to explore all these incredible locations. I got to say, it seems like every, not even every block, but every few feet, there's a whole new story, a whole new piece of history that you could spend hours talking about. But people come here, they talk about, obviously, the OK Corral, they talk about Crystal Palace, the Birdcage, you know, there's so many locations. And even here in the Longhorn, Bruce, who was off camera, was saying that this is where is Earp's brother, right? That was shot.
Virgil
Earp that was shot here. But
From here.
And so what's been a story that it's like people come into town and they're excited to learn about Tombstone, but you kind of want to add that other chapter, that other bit of history to the story that they may not know. Like, okay, yeah, you came to the OK Corral, but did you know this? You came to the Crystal Palace, but did you know this little wrinkle in the history? What are some things like that?
You know, probably the thing that stands out the most is the misused image of Doc Holliday. Even around Tombstone, one of the most popular, you know, Old West towns there is, you will still see pictures of a fellow that was named John Escapool in place of Doc Holliday. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. I think someone found this photo several years later, and someone had labeled it as Doc Holliday, but it actually wasn't. But this image is all over the United States as Doc Holliday, and it's actually not him.
There, thousands of tattoos.
Yeah, tattoos and stuff like that that people have gotten, and it's the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And that is a really interesting story. I think even somewhere up front in the building here, there's the wrong picture of Doc Holliday. But there's only two pictures of Doc that exist, and one of them was when he was in dental school and he was very young. And then the other one, you can't really see his face too well because the top part of the picture is really faded and stuff. And that's, according to his family, those are the only two that exist. So this third one that popped up sometime 100 years ago or whatever it was, they assumed was him, but it turns out it wasn't him.
Yeah.
So there's pictures all over the place of the wrong Doc Holliday. That's one of the things I like telling tourists the most, because people see that picture and they think that's Doc Holliday. It's actually not.
You should just hang out in the tattoo parlors as they're getting that face tattooed on and be like, you know, that's the wrong one.
That's the wrong guy. Yeah, John Escapel. And John Escapel is buried over here at the New City Cemetery, which is well over 100 years old, but they call it the New Cemetery after Boot Hill closed down. They started using that place instead. So
yeah,
that's a really interesting story because the guy's buried here.
Yeah. And that is cool because, I mean, I love that part of history because for so long it could just pass as Doc Holliday's photo before, you know, there was a little bit more
nobody knew
work.
For a long time. Yeah.
Andy's blood related to the current mayor.
Oh.
John Escapel, yeah.
Okay.
Dusty Escapel is the mayor now.
You know, you gotta have a place like Tombstone where the mayor's name is Dusty.
Yeah, that's that is perfect. Fits. Mayor Dusty. So what are some other pieces of history like that, little kind of chapters that you like to add into the story that people may not know but makes it even more
You know,
rich?
Another thing I learned when I started really digging into history is the whole, like, Old West shoot 'em up gunfight thing where the two guys stand at the corner at high noon and they draw and stuff. I come to find out that that event only happened one time in history, and it wasn't here. I think it was in Kansas. It was,
Dodge City, I think.
It might have been Dodge City. I don't remember who it was. It was,
The classic cinematic showdown of the two
high
guys
noon,
in the
street,
tumbleweeds going by.
Yeah, that
dusty.
That was. Turns out that was not a thing. Like, when you think of Tombstone, like, when I first moved here, I thought, well, that must have happened every day here, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, people were shot and killed every day, but not that way. That's something that Hollywood made very popular, and it was far more popular in the movies than it ever was in real life. You could probably name 10 movies where that's happened, and the actual event only happened once.
Now you said that was in maybe Kansas City, but if it wasn't a regular occurrence, then what would a quote-unquote standard gunfight or shootout look like in a place like Tombstone,
a legit one? A lot of the more popular ones were just people being drunk, doing stupid things, getting into altercations in the street.
Some things never change, I guess.
Yeah. Luke Short killed Charlie Storms right across the street at the Oriental, and that was stemming from an argument they had the night before. And he came back the next morning, which Luke was still in there drinking the whole time. But Luke Short was a pretty bad guy, and he had no problem defending himself against Charlie Storms, and Charlie Storms died right out there in front of the Oriental. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's another one. Things like that people don't always think of. But yeah, there were, if you read the placards and stuff, I mean, there are people that died all over this town.
What's your favorite, your personal favorite story? The one that, you know, maybe it's not even the most famous, but one that you love.
My favorite is probably the John Heath lynching. The guy who was found to be, well, allegedly, he was the ringleader of the Bisbee massacre, which ended up in the death of several innocent people. And so according to the story, he wasn't actually involved with that. He was the ringleader. And they sentenced him to life in prison because he didn't actually kill anybody. The other five guys, they hung them over here at the courthouse. But that wasn't good enough. The people found out that he was only going to get life in prison. They weren't happy about that. They broke him out of the courthouse over here. They took him down the street and they hung him from a pole, a telegraph pole. And there's a famous picture. If you look up John Heath, it'll probably be the picture that comes up. But you can see the photo they took when he was hanging up there. Part of that pole is still there in the ground. It only comes up about 3 inches or so, but there's a plaque right there telling about... That's a story that I didn't know about when I first came here. And the more you spend time in Cochise County, you learn about the Bisbee Massacre. And it's like, well, what happened in Bisbee? What does that have to do with Tombstone? And that's what it was. The county seat was up here at the time, so they were holding him at the jail up here. The people didn't like it that he wasn't going to face death, so they broke him out of the jail. They overpowered the marshal, and they hung him out there on the corner.
Give me a rundown of the Bisbee Massacre.
So there was a business in Bisbee. I think it was Castaneda's General Store is what it was. There were a lot of miners in Bisbee at the time. A lot of the miners didn't trust the banks with their money. So they had a guy that they knew in town who was friendly to the miners who would hold the money until the stagecoach showed up or whatever. They got wind that payroll was supposed to be coming into town. So these five guys, I think they were Cochise Cowboys actually, and John Heath, who worked at a store a couple doors down, he planned the whole thing out. They rode into town. They were going to steal the money out of the safe. They got to the shop too early. They broke into the shop. This is in broad daylight. At gunpoint, the guy opens the safe. There's nothing in the safe except for $3,000 and a watch. They were expecting a lot more money. The stagecoach hadn't showed up yet. So by this point, people are seeing what's going on. Right across the street from there in Bisbee's where all the bars are. This is like the main street in Bisbee at the time. So people were seeing what was going on. They were starting to get curious coming down. Something happened with the cowboys. They must have realized the jig was up, but they just start blasting people trying to get out of there, which they did. Eventually, they were all caught, and they were all hung. But that's the story that... if you watch the movie Tombstone, like, you never hear about that. They even mentioned Bisbee at the beginning of the movie. But that is probably the biggest tie-in between Tombstone and Bisbee, is that event, because it took place in Bisbee, but the lynching and everything happened up here in Tombstone.
Yeah. Are there any stories that that might be part of the popular culture that that we get wrong? I mean, you mentioned the Doc Holliday photo. Mm-hmm. I even think with, like, you know, the Bisbee Massacre, there might be a lot of things people don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other elements that you would like to set the record straight about?
Something that's wrong. Well, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the movie Tombstone.
Right.
And I think most everybody knows that movie is not historically accurate. It's close, but I mean, if you really break it down, a couple of things in that movie that stand out right away. In the movie, they refer to the graveyard as Boot Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Boot Hill wasn't called Boot Hill until sometime, I want to say, in the 1920s or 30s. Again, that was a Hollywood thing.
Okay.
They didn't call it Boot Hill at the time. They called it the Tombstone Cemetery or something like that. But in the movie, they have a sign that says Boot Hill. That wouldn't have been possible because they didn't do that until later on in the 20s or the 30s or something like that. Another thing that happens in the movie is you see entire scenes that took place in the Birdcage Theater before the gunfight. The Birdcage actually wasn't even open until December of 81, which would have been like 2 months after the gunfight. So there's a couple things in the movie that time-wise don't really add up. I did a video about that a while back, and I was explaining, you know, I get it. You know, it's a movie. It's got a flow. In the movie, they make it look like Virgil and Morgan are shot on the same night, when in actuality, it's 7-8 months apart, something like that. So, but again, you know, it's a movie. You got to make everything flow together and stuff like that. So there are things that really stand out as far as things that are misnomers, things that people get wrong, mostly stems from the movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie was so popular.
Yeah, it's such a thing to grapple with, a complicated thing, because it's great because it brings continued attention to the town, but you're always having to correct the record on these things. So, that's cool though. Anything else from the movie that just stands out that you think?
Nothing that comes offhand, you know.
Doc Holliday killing Johnny Ringo.
Oh yeah, Doc Holliday did not kill Johnny Ringo. No one's really sure if he killed himself or if Buckskin Frank Leslie, I think, is probably the one that killed him. But in the movie, you know, Doc Holliday kills him.
Yeah.
That's not what happened.
Yeah.
The place where that actually happened is only about 50 miles from here, where Johnny Ringo was shot, and they buried him right there.
Yeah.
And they did a great job in the movie because that looks very much like the actual place. It wasn't, but it looks very much like the actual place. But yeah, I think just for dramatic effect, they had Doc kill him in the movie, and that's virtual impossibility that would have happened since he would already been up in Colorado with very bad... emphysema. Was it emphysema he had?
Tuberculosis.
Yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about the paranormal and ghost stories of Tombstone. Obviously, the ghost stories have become as popular as the history itself, as popular as the real history. So many ghost stories here. What would you say... And I know you did a video on this, and you open your video, you know, asking, is Tombstone haunted? And you have a whole bevy of characters saying, like, heck yes, like, mm-hmm. It's definitely haunted. But for those people that may have been living under a rock, or perhaps haven't watched paranormal TV in the last 20 years, give us the rundown, the greatest hits of Tombstone hauntings and some of the reported activity mm-hmm. in these locations.
Well, one, probably the most notorious place in town is the Birdcage Theater. I think it's even got a historical designation for being like one of the federally government-regulated haunted places or whatever.
Because ghosts really fill out the paperwork. Like,
yeah.
File those, the surveys and the
exactly.
census. Yeah.
But that is a... everyone says that's a paranormal hotspot, and they do ghost tours in there on certain nights of the week, and we've done several of them ourselves.
Supposedly ladies of the night that are haunting the area.
Correct.
Like, what are some of the activity that you remember?
So REM pod activity is really popular in there, EKGs, things like that. As far as what I've seen myself, they do have, kind of back behind the stage, they have, it's kind of a museum in there, so they've got some old relics hanging from the ceiling and stuff, and they've got an old mortician's table in there. And it's not really what you would think of when you think of a table. It's actually very small, and it's got like a wicker kind of like base to it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they would just put the bodies on there and drain the blood or whatever. But they have one of these hanging up from a metal beam that's going across the room. And the tour guide was telling us that that table had been known to kind of move around on its own. And it's interesting because it would never move front to back. It was always side to side. Always. And I didn't really believe this story until about two or three times we did this. And it was like the third or fourth time when I actually saw it happen myself.
Mm-hmm.
I did see it on more than one occasion. It's kind of strange that it's just one object. I mean, I really look. I'm not like a ghost hunter like you guys are, but when I go out and do stuff, like, I'm really looking for like anything. And a lot of times, nothing happens.
Yeah.
But that is one of the times, you know, I try to get on film. Of course, as soon as I break out the camera, it stops. And we walked away and it started again. So, you know, maybe a mischievous spirit or something like that in there. But that's one of the few things I've actually seen. Right there in the birdcage, a couple doors down is the Undertaker's Espresso Bar. Last year at Paracon, I accidentally filmed an object moving by itself. But other than those two things, I haven't actually seen anything.
What was the object? What was moving by itself?
So it was in the kind of the back closet by the bathroom. They've got like a mop sink in there, and there's some like plastic crates that are stacked up. Some kind of electrical thing with a cord.
Yeah.
And when we were in there looking around, you know, again, I wasn't expecting it. I just barely caught it out of the corner of the frame of the camera. But inside one of those crates, the cord like jumped out and it like looped over the side and it was just hanging there like that.
Yeah.
And me and another guy saw that happen. And I got most of that on film. I didn't get the whole thing. But you can see like something move and then the cord is just kind of dangling there. And I told the guys, like, that cord right there just jumped out of that box by itself.
Yeah.
And so I asked the lady, because they've been doing tours all night, it's like, anybody been messing with this crate, this cord, anything? No, nothing. I tried to, like, get the cord to kind of, maybe if it's, you know, in a U-shape for so long, it does it by itself, so I was messing with it, trying to get it to do it, no way it was doing it by itself.
See, it sounds like you're doing a pretty good paranormal investigation there. You're
trying
to debunk things and figure it out. What are, and some of the other kind of the rock star spaces here for hauntings, or even maybe personalities of so-called ghosts that move through the space.
Right. I mean, gosh, it seems like the whole place, the whole town, there's people that see things all over the place.
It's hard to, like, narrow it down, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously the Birdcage, the OK Corral, Boot Hill Cemetery is a big one. The new cemetery is a very creepy place, especially at night. It's a lot bigger than Boot Hill and almost just as old, but there's a lot of activity that people report out there at the cemetery. At both cemeteries, Boot Hill and the new cemetery. OK Corral, obviously the legendary, you know, Old West gunfight there and all that stuff.
People hearing like gunshots and whatnot,
yeah,
phantom gunshots.
Stuff that happens on
Allen
Street.
Hard to pin down since there are legitimate simulated gunfights taking place during the day every day. Yeah.
But I've ran into plenty of people who just talk to me about things that happen on Allen Street. They're walking around and they hear footsteps. I've had that happen myself late at night.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's two or three people walking along with you and there's not, you know. But I've met people, tourists, people in the bars and stuff that tell me about things that they've seen out there. Everything from, you know, full body apparitions to a guy told me he saw a guy riding a horse down the street at like 3 a.m.
Wow.
And he's trying to tell me he didn't believe in ghosts, but then he said he turned around and the horse was gone, the guy was gone, the noise was gone. And he said he couldn't explain it, but I said, well, it sounds like you might believe in ghosts, actually. He's like, yeah, I don't know what that was. I don't think it was a ghost, but it's like, well, I don't know what else that would be. But things like that, people see stuff on Allen Street quite a bit.
That's a kind of a classic recurring theme of people that say, like, I don't believe in ghosts, but there was this one time, and then they launch into a story, which I love. I mean, because it shows that even though they have that preface, that disclaimer,
right,
they're going to talk about something extraordinary. There was, in one of your videos, I wanted to touch on this, there was a gentleman, and I forget the I don't know if it was in the Antiques Mall, but a gentleman that has a relationship, almost like a friendship with a ghost.
Steve Murray over at the Smokies Emporium. Yeah,
sets aside shelves and broken watches that are sort of the possessions of the spirit, right?
Yeah, that's what he says. Yeah.
And what do you know the name of this ghost that he interacts with? I forget the name.
There's a bunch.
He said that he said 11. He put a number on. He said there's 11 I think he said personalities that live in here. I can't remember what he said.
One of them's Bill or something
like that. Something real basic. Bill that or Bob sounds about or right. Like that.
Any other kind of named ghosts that people say that they interact with?
So one that's real popular is Emma.
Yeah.
I don't know a whole lot about Emma, but a lot of people say that there's a spirit of a young girl that kind of pops up all over town. Yeah, they hear her voice on a lot of different things. And it's funny because it always sounds kind of like the same voice, like a little girl's voice.
Okay.
But she's apparently real mischievous, likes to talk. I know she's talked to you a bunch of times, Bruce. I don't have any experiences with Emma myself that I'm aware of. I have had weird things happen in Shefflin Hall, but no telling.
Like?
So there were really two things that stand out the most in Shefflin Hall. I believe it was at the Tombstone 30th reunion. Somebody was supposed to open the hall for the guests that were starting to show up, but somebody was late, so they asked if I could go down and do it. I said, sure. So I went down there about 4:30, opened up Shefflin Hall, turned the lights on. I was the only one in the building. In the lobby, there were some chairs that were stacked up, and so I had a bunch of stuff in my pockets. I was the only one there, so I just put all my stuff down on this chair. I went back outside. I was outside for maybe about 5 minutes looking around both directions, like, oh, no one's out here yet. So I go back inside. Went back inside. The keys that I left on my chair with all the other stuff were on the middle, like in the middle of the lobby floor, almost right in front of the door. Like in the 5 minutes I was out there just looking around, getting some air, go back inside. Keys are moved from the chair to the floor. It's probably about 20 feet between the two, so it didn't just fall off the chair. And so I was standing there looking at my keys for a few minutes, like, okay, I know I didn't drop them there. There's nobody else in the building. So there's only one thing I can think of that would cause that to happen, but who knows?
Yeah.
Second situation I had in Shefflin Hall, similar type of thing. We were getting ready for an event. There's a bunch of doors that lead to old closets and stuff like that, and we were putting signs up that say, do not enter. And so I had three signs I was going to put up in the lobby. I grabbed one, put tape on it, put the other two down on the table, walked over to the corner of the lobby, put the sign up on the door, come back to the table. Those two other posters that were there are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
Krissa and Rebecca were in there, but they were backstage. So I holler out to them, like, hey, did you guys come up here just now? No. I was like, well, I don't know where those signs went, and we didn't have any more, so I couldn't finish the job. But Krissa actually found them the next day. They were in a box, a cardboard box, in the corner of the lobby, way on the other end of the lobby from where I was. No idea how they got in there.
And give a shout out. Who's Krissa?
Krissa is a city clerk.
Okay. And now those sound peculiar, strange, maybe a little unsettling, but has there been a time where you've been out and out, creeped out, or even so freaked out
frightened,
that you're like,
terrified.
Or you're like, I need to back away and get out of this space or this area?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I always try to... You know, I'm sure in your experiences there have been times where it's like, okay, did that really happen, or is my imagination just playing tricks on me, you know? So I don't usually freak out too much until I know for sure. But luckily, I filmed just about everything, so I can always go back and look. There have been several times where I went back and I looked. It's like, oh, wait a minute, that's not what it looked like. That was something else or whatever.
I mean, you have a lot of footage, yeah.
Yeah. But as far as being, like, scared, no. I've been in a couple of investigations where other people freaked out and they had to leave the building.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, okay, was that person just in their own head freaking out, or did something actually happen? This lady claimed that something touched her, and she freaked and got up and demanded that she had to leave. So they let her out, you know? They don't let you back in after that. But no, nothing that's been super terrifying, I would say.
Well, I'll give you a shout-out. Now, Bruce Burnett is not in the frame right now. However... he did say that he had a scary, scary story. Something that's really freaked him out. So, Bruce, I'm gonna at least get that story from you, because I can't let that dangle. I need to find that out. What was the story that had you so chilled to the bone that you needed to exit a space?
I didn't need to exit the space. And I don't know if I'd say I was terrified, but for last year's Paracon, we had some investigative teams that were helping us out. So we said, we never let people investigate Shefflin Hall. And these certain teams, we said, we're going to let you investigate Shefflin Hall because, you know, you're helping us out. And we went there, and there was a team who I had never met that was down in the basement. And they were talking to Emma. And Emma answers on Spirit Box in, like, complete sentences and usually with intelligent answers. And that doesn't really freak me out. That's not a problem for me. But they were down there. I don't see great at night, so I'm not one for going on a lot of investigation. So I'm sitting in the main hall, and they come up out of the basement, and they said, oh, we were talking to this girl, and they're explaining. I'm like, it sounds like Emma, kind of precocious. And they're like, oh my God, she was talking in complete sentences and asking questions, but we couldn't talk to the other spirit. And I'm like, the other spirit? She goes, Emma kept saying to make sure we said hi to Bruce. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, my name's Bruce. And like without missing a beat, she's like, oh, Emma said to say hi to you. And I'm like, but it was creepy because, you know, you always think, you know, if there's names in some kind of spirit box or something, there's some database. And it's like, Bruce is not the most normal name. You'd think you'd find names like Mark or Steve or Robert or Juan or whatever that would be highly findable. But, you know, she said Bruce. And I was genuinely kind of creeped out. And I used to work there doing plays and stuff back in the day. And every time I've been in Shefflin Hall, last year during the speakers, a number of participants watching the speakers, and a couple of the speakers saw shadow figures on the stairs.
Okay.
Like when people were speaking. You're going to be speaking there. So, you know, keep an eye on the staircase there because you never know.
I will indeed. Yeah, I'll be speaking at the Wild West Paracon here in Tombstone, and I'll be keeping an eye out in the theater for creepy things happening around me. Is there anything... I always like to ask about kind of ghost stories that perhaps don't match up with history. That doesn't mean that maybe there's not a ghost or a ghost story associated with it, but is there any kind of ghost story in Tombstone that people connect to history that you're like, well, actually, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That history would not match that activity, or that person did not move through those halls or anything like that?
Huh. That's a good one. I don't think so. That came to mind. Yeah, that wasn't necessarily supernatural, but, you know, you've heard about the Tombstone Thunderbird.
Lay it on me.
It's probably about 99% likely that it's a complete hoax, but there's this photo that's been going around for a while. It's supposedly taken back in 1880-something of all these miners, and they've captured or killed, like, what is essentially a pterodactyl. There's like 8 of them holding its wings up, and they're posing with it with their guns and stuff like that. And I don't know how, but this photo has been passed around for a long time.
Was this the one that it was even presented on a late night talk show?
I forget
which late night talk show, and then kind of disappeared, but
yeah,
from like sort of popular consciousness in some ways, but it's kind of been experienced a bit of a resurgence as far as internet lore and things like that.
It could have been. I mean, I know I heard about it way back in the day, and then when I moved here, I saw that photo again, and I started kind of looking into it, but it seems like the story is completely false, because at the time, I forgot what the date was on it, but at the time, the newspaper didn't have the ability to print photos.
Yeah.
So that was one of the biggest flaws with the story.
They had a story about it.
Yeah.
Is that but the photo itself is not still circulating, right? Is it?
I mean, you can find it online.
Yeah.
It's the one.
Yeah.
There's only one, yeah.
Any other, you know, kind of going along those lines, that there's a Thunderbird story, any other creepy cryptid lore or other kind of sort of supernatural things in the area, or even lights, strange lights in the skies that you've heard of, that you personally have witnessed, that people talk about, anything along those lines?
No, stuff in the sky, no.
Aliens clearly do not have an interest in Tombstone, I guess. They're lost, really. They're lost.
I know, and cowboys and aliens.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, they didn't fare so well in that movie, so no. I guess maybe that's it. I mean, Thunderbird, any kind of creatures or cryptids or other urban legends in town that you've heard of?
There's, I know like some of the indigenous tribes kind of had a similar story about a Thunderbird or like a phoenix kind of thing. I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but I've heard different tribes talking about that. So it seemed like something that maybe even the natives were familiar with.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
whether
the Thunderbird
or not they actually
lore.
Saw it, you know, is a different story. But
so let's kind of do a rundown of, okay, so you come to Tombstone as a tourist. You have a couple days, hopefully, to spend here. What are, not even specifically paranormal, but what are the things that you gotta do, like, you come to Tombstone? The things that you check out, the food that you go to, maybe mm-hmm. the, you know, anything like that. What would you say?
So the must-dos, I would definitely, probably one of the things that's not quite as popular as the Oki Corral is the rose tree. We got the world's largest rose tree, your rose bush here in Tombstone. And, that's actually right around the corner from here, but that's only $5. That's a really cool thing to see.
8,500 square feet.
Yeah, like 9,000 okay. square feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it broke the record, I want to say, like in the 1920s as the world's largest. And here we are like 100 years later, and it's still bigger than it's ever been before. So yeah. That's an interesting thing to see. And that museum used to be a house, somebody's house. That's a good one. Of course, the OK Corral, the Birdcage, those are probably the most popular. Boot Hill, mm-hmm. the most popular. The Courthouse is a good one to go see. The Gunfire Museum over here at Old Tombstone is a really interesting museum as well.
I know I said I'm having a margarita here at the Longhorn restaurant, but any specific signature food items that people should try out when they're in Tombstone?
Signature food items? Probably not. I mean, most of the restaurants kind of have the same stuff. Burgers, fries, steaks, salads.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them do pizzas and stuff like that. I like it all. But as far as like a signature dish...
I'm staying over at the Larian, or the right, the Larian right. Motel. And
the Larian's got a lot of haunted activity.
Yeah, that when I checked in, I need to talk more with the manager over there, but they said that they had some good ghost stories. It's a really cute motel and a really cozy spot, but the gentleman there was also saying that there is a spot down here that has some incredible calzones, so apparently I have to check that out, an Italian spot, so I'll need to check that out. And you know, also I'm kind of excited, gonna spend a couple nights here for the Wild West Paracon, kind of excited to branch out late at night and just walk, you know, walk down the streets a little bit. Is that advisable? Or somebody going to mistake me for a ghost?
No.
I'm going to get shot at or something.
Have you been here before?
I have not.
Oh, this, wow. Well, then, yeah, you have to. You have to.
Yeah.
You can't come here and not walk around Allen Street in the middle of the night. It's,
yeah.
And
nothing quite like
be
it.
At the mine. The mine, you know, people don't really realize this about Tombstone because you always hear about shootout at the OK Corral, but none of this would be here if it wasn't for the largest silver strike in Arizona history, which was here. And where you guys are going to be is down in the mine, and Dave knows a significant amount about the mine.
Yeah, there's a lot of paranormal activity reported down there. It's interesting, too, because you'll have two different guests and two different tours, and Robert even told me sometimes they're even from different countries, and they're describing the same person.
Yeah.
Like, why is there a guy down there with a thing around his neck and the blue hat, and he's like, what? And then like the next tour someone will say the same thing. He's like, there's no possible way that those people could have known each other. In this case, like one lady was from Japan, the other was from England or something, but they both came out of the mine saying to Robert, the owner of the mine, is like, we saw a guy down there. And then, you know, he's like, well, there's nobody down there. And the lady was like, well, he's dead, but he told me to tell you that you know, just watch out when you're down there, it can be dangerous, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that around the mine. If you ask Robert, the guy who owns the mine, he's got a bunch of stories about where he thinks they possibly could have saved his life. Like someone kind of pushed him out of the way when something fell.
I'll have to chat with
and
him.
And he was kind of like, wow, I didn't really mean to do that, but it's almost like something pushed me and a lantern or something fell, a rock fell or something, and just barely missed him.
Maybe Bruce can set up a chat with him. And so myself and Shane Pittman, who is also at the event, will be leading some paranormal investigations there with some of the attendees. Very excited about that. Out of curiosity, were the miners that were brought, that were working here in Tombstone, were they Cornish? Because I know in a lot of cases...
I think they were pretty much everything.
Yeah.
A lot of Chinese.
Any stories of Tommyknockers down there in the mines that you've heard of?
Not that I've heard. Robert might be able to tell you a couple things about that. Obviously, he spends a lot of time... He's been the manager for 20 years, and he's been in mines for like 35, I want to say. So he spent a lot of time underground. But who was it? It was here. Richard Estep was here in the mine and asked about that. And he I can't remember exactly what he said, but he had a couple interesting little tidbits when it comes to the Tommyknockers.
Yeah, Richard. Rich is a good buddy of mine, and he'll be at the Wild West Paracon as well. And you can also, he's got a million books, it seems like, out there. So you have to check out some of those. Dave, how can, I know Desert Sky Adventures, but lay it on us, how can people follow you, support you, maybe send in some questions or requests or anything?
Yeah, well, the main channel is Desert Sky Adventures on YouTube. We're also on Facebook at Desert Sky Adventures, Instagram, and my email is desertskydave@gmail.com.
Right on. Okay. Well, and any teases for some upcoming videos? I know, like you said, you got a lot of them out there. There's some great paranormal ones. That's a great one because it's a 20-minute long video. I really enjoyed it. Any teases for some upcoming videos?
Not yet. I'm kind of focusing on Paracon this weekend. I'm going to try to cover as much of that as possible, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you throughout the Wild West Paracon.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your time today, and so yeah, Dave, thank you so much. Dave Silva of Desert Sky Adventures talking to us at the Longhorn Restaurant here in Tombstone, and we're here for the Tombstone Wild West Paracon, and I'm enjoying a lovely margarita from the Longhorn Restaurant. And folks, thanks for checking it out. I'm Aaron Sagers. This has been Talking Strange, and until next time, stay spooky. Be kind, and keep it weird.
Talking Strange is a part of the Den of Geek Network, available wherever you listen to other podcasts. If you like what we're doing, share Talking Strange with your friends and fellow spooky nerds. And please, subscribe, rate, and leave a nice review. If you have a strange or paranormal story you would like to share with us, please email talkingstrange@denofgeek.com for a chance to have it read on a future episode. For video episodes of Talking Strange, check out twitch.tv/denofgeektv and youtube.com/denofgeekus. And please follow @talkstrangepod on Twitter and @AaronSagers on Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon for more paranormal pop culture content.